Welcome to Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. Coming up on today's podcast, we're going to have an interview with Dorothy Milne, the artistic director of Lifeline Theater. Also, Tom Williams will be giving you his reviews of four great shows in the Chicago area. And, of course, as always, the theater news. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. Welcome to Talk Theater in Chicago's news podcast. I'm Dustin Moat, giving you the news, brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. The Theater Building Chicago will be celebrating Black History Month with two unique musical performances. To start off, Tap Dynamo Savion Glover will be bringing his newest work, If Train Was Here, to the Belmont Avenue Theater for a limited run February 14th through the 19th. The Tony Award-winning star will present an evening of dance, poetry, and jazz to pay tribute to John Coltrane and other jazz legends. And also, the Theater Building Chicago will be presenting the world premiere of Josephine Tonight, a new musical based on the early life of Josephine Baker. The musical will open on February 20th and run through March 26th. Look out, the Black Ensemble Theater will be moving, and it is a done deal. The Black Ensemble Theater will take possession of a new 50,000-square-foot home at 4400 North Clark in the Uptown neighborhood. The new facility will open in the spring of 2008 and be an arts complex that contains a 299-seat main stage theater, as well as a 150-seat studio theater, and will also include educational and training facilities, as well as administrative offices. Congratulations, Black Ensemble Theater. The Victory Gardens all-amateur Hello Dolly benefit will wow audiences for two nights only. More than 50 Chicagoans from all walks of life will enjoy two nights of fame starring in the Victory Garden Theater's all-amateur benefit production of Hello Dolly, Friday, February 17th at 8 o'clock, and Saturday, February 18th at 7 o'clock. All this at the Athenaeum Theater. A diverse cast of doctors, lawyers, business owners, and housewives will perform in this beloved Broadway musical about Dolly Levy, a professional meddler and matchmaker who merrily arranges things. Ticket sales support the theater's new play mission and outreach programs, including the arts education initiatives with Chicago Public Schools, the Access Project for Persons with Disabilities, and the Victory Gardens Training Center. Be sure to get to TalkTheaterInChicago.com's theater news section. There you're going to see a great interview with Kristen Page, a bubbly and talented young actress that will soon be seen in the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, opening March 28th at the Drury Lane Water Tower Place. John Hurd, the actor from Fox's Prison Break, will be joining the cast of an upcoming Steppenwolf Theater world premiere. Love Lies Bleeding by Don DeLillo will be running from April 27th through May 28th at Steppenwolf's Upstairs Theater. Then it'll be moving over to Washington, D.C. in June. The drama will be directed by Amy Morton and deals with issues such as mercy killing and natural death. The smash Broadway hit Urinetown will be coming to Chicago. That's right, the Broadway Tony Award-winning musical, created by Chicago's own Mark Holman and Greg Kotis, will begin its first commercial Chicago sit-down run this spring. The play opens on Sunday, March 26th at the Mercury Theater on Southport. Do not miss this. cultural icon Lois Weisberg will be receiving a landmark honor. Her name has become synonymous for pioneering contributions that have enriched and improved Chicago's cultural art scenes over the past 2.5 decades. Now, the commissioner of the Chicago Department of Cultural Affairs is being recognized by the Landmarks Preservation Council of Illinois with its first ever Legendary Landmarks Award. The award will be presented at a gala on Saturday, March 4th at the historic Palmer House. Congratulations, Lois Weisberg. This has been Talk Theater in Chicago's news podcast. For more information on these and other stories, please check out talktheaterinchicago.com.
Hi, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's Reviews Podcast. Coming up in this podcast are the following reviews: Fences at Court Theater, followed by Bus Stop at Writers Theater. We are also going to review Grace at Northlight Theater and the terrific show The Seahorse at Red Orchid Theater. Here is my review of Fences by August Wilson at Court Theater on the campus of University of Chicago. Fences is August Wilson's classic. Fences is a brilliant play that captures the black urban dialect that Wilson turns into fluid dialogue that presents as poetic and lyrical. August Wilson certainly has that realistic black dialogue down. It's a combination of southern slang with the lyrical and poetic sound that he is famous for. He's also a master storyteller as he presents in Fences the voices of the common urban black man found on back porches, in diners, and on street corners. Wilson develops wonderfully full-dimensional characters whose struggles to honorably survive the pain of being black men in America is passionately presented in his 10-play chronicle of the 20th century life. Thank God August was able to finish all 10 plays before his untimely death in 2005. With Fences, which I consider to be probably the best show that we have seen in Chicago in many a years at Court Theater, kudos to the direction and to the performances at Court. This play really will grab you. Anyhow, Fences deals with the complications of holding a family together during the changing times of the 1950s, when race issues and personal identity, confusion, and the limits of the past conflict with the hopes of the present. Featuring a terrific realistic set by Jack McGaw that shows three houses in the modest black area of Pittsburgh, we meet the garbage man Troy, played in a riveting, powerful performance by A.C. Smith. He is the 53-year-old married man who harbors bitterness from his cruel childhood where his father abused him, forcing him to leave his home in the sharecrop farm in Alabama. He migrates to Pittsburgh, where he survives like many men of that era who couldn't find work by stealing. Later, after he has a wife and a child, he was forced to steal even more. He gets into a knife fight, gets shot, and during the knife fight, kills the man who shot him, and he ends up in prison for 15 years. That's where he learned to play baseball, and later he becomes a star in the Negro League. Too old to make the major leagues after Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier in 1946, Troy's anger and bitterness and his duty to his family conflict as he tries to prevent his children from experiencing the pain and disappointment he has endured by dashing their hopes and their dreams with cold, practical reality as he sees it. Many people call Fences the black version of Death of a Salesman, although I don't quite see the parallel there, because Troy is a much more bitter man than the Willie Loman character would be. Troy keeps his loved ones out of his life by negating and forbidding them their attempts to advance in life. The picket fence he builds in his yard is his metaphor for shutting out hopes and dreams, but his wife, Rose, played by Jacqueline Williams, in a marvelous performance. She believes the new fence is her attempt to keep the family together, safe in their own space. Troy is a tragic hero who, on one hand, honorably toils to preserve and shelter his family the best way he can, and on the other hand, he kills the dreams in his sons as he tries to shield them from the pain that he has encountered in a racist America. We witness the conflict in ways one generation sees the past and the future. The older folks fear change, the younger ones optimistically anticipate it. Fences is a modern classic American play that explores the boundaries families face as the children's hope for the future are balanced with the limits of race, culture, and class. Our fences either become limiting forces or gateways to success. Wilson marvelously shows us how the blacks in the 1950s struggled with their own fences. Director Ron O.J. Parson has mounted a fabulous work that pays homage to Wilson's masterpiece. I was very much moved by the power of this piece. Be sure to get the Court Theater to experience one of the finest plays of our time. My rating, not to be missed. Fences runs Wednesdays and Thursdays at 7:30 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m., Saturdays at 3 and 8 p.m., Sundays at 2:30 and 7:30 p.m. The running time is 2 hours and 40 minutes with intermission. Court Theater is located on the campus of the University of Chicago at 5535 South Ellis. They have free parking that's right next to the theater. The phone number for more information and tickets, 773-753-4472. That's 773-753-4472. Hi, this is Tom Williams, and here is my review of Bus Stop by William Ng at Writers Theater in Glencoe. Director Rick Snyder and his design team have mounted a set designed by Jack McGaw, who seems to be the designer of all the hot shows in town. His set becomes a time warp back into the 1950s with a roadside diner complete with the aroma of ham and eggs. They were actually cooking ham and eggs on the set, and I almost felt like going down there and ordering an omelet or something. William Ng, a contemporary friend and rival of Tennessee Williams, gave us a realistic look at the Midwest heartland with plays such as Come Back Little Sheba and Picnic, each set in the 1950s. Ng's talent lies in his ability to create well-rounded, small-town common folks. Rick Snyder and Writers Theater have cast a terrific ensemble, each of whom land their characters with realism and depth. This authentic reflection of Midwest small-town life is set in a roadside diner in Kansas circa 1955, where a busload of travelers are stranded in a March snowstorm. We meet the young waitress, Elma, played by Lindsay Page Morton, as a naively idealistic high school student and part-time waitress. Together with proprietor Grace, played by Penny Slusher, the two are preparing for the next busload of travelers who will arrive shortly. Will Masters, played by Mick Weber, the local sheriff, arrives for his nightly coffee and announces that the roads will soon be closed due to the blizzard. The bus contains a blonde nightclub performer, Sherry, played by Suzanne Lang, in a role reminiscent of the one that made Marilyn Monroe famous in the film of Bus Stop. Sherry is desperately afraid of the cowboy who has strong-armed her onto the bus from Kansas City toward his Montana ranch where he intends to marry her. The cowboy, Bo, played by Cliff Chamberlain, goes from a macho, raging bully to apologizing gentleman in a marvelous performance that highlights this romantic comedy. This play is as much a slice-of-life look at the world of rural America in the 1950s as it is romantic comedy. The scenes where Bo and Sherry's courtship blossoms once Bo calms down frames the piece. The bus driver, Carl, played by Jamie Van, pines for Grace, and they connect when she goes upstairs to, quote, rest, and Carl takes a, quote, walk in the snow. The sexual innuendo there was very 1950s, but it worked marvelously. We see how the college professor, Dr. Lyman, played by William Brown in a riveting performance. He is the Shakespeare-quoting snob who deftly attempts to seduce the young waitress, Elma, whose idealism makes her vulnerable to his sophisticated charm. Virgil, played by Paul Noble, is a mentor buddy to Bo and is the typical stoic cowboy, complete with a worn 10-gallon hat. The dynamics of Ng's well-structured play allows each character to express their dreams, hopes, and the loneliness as we see their desperation and yearning played out overnight while they're marooned in a diner. This is a tremendous ensemble piece where almost all the actors are on stage at all times, and when they're not in a given scene, they are reacting to the scene. So it's one of those that in writers' small but efficient theater, your line of sight, almost anywhere you sit, is such that you can take in all the action. So watching the people react to the scenes is almost as interesting as the scenes as they play themselves out. This is an example of ensemble acting as good as you'll see. And Rick Snyder, who is a Steppenwolf ensemble member, sure knows how to do those. Filled with gripping and fluid dialogue, Bus Stop is an engaging work so filled with empathetic characters that we willingly escape into the world of 1950s Kansas. I got so into this play, I wanted to sit down and order ham and eggs with rye toast. And I think if I had, Penny Slusher probably would have brought them up to me. The tight direction and outstanding performances, together with Ng's rich characters, make this classic a fulfilling night at the theater. I especially like Bill Brown's Dr. Lyman, Cliff Chamberlain's Bo, Lindsay Page Morton's Elma. Seeing Bus Stop come to life reminds me of just how excellent Ng was as a storyteller. My rating for the show, highly recommended. Bus Stop is at Writers Theater in Glencoe, Illinois. Shows are Tuesday through Friday at 8, Saturdays 5 and 8, Sundays 2:30 and 6. Running time is 2 hours and 20 minutes with 2 intermissions. For more information, call Writers Theater at 1-847-242-6000. That's 1-847-242-6000. Hi, this is Tom Williams, and here is my review of Grace by Craig Wright at North Light Theater in Skokie. Grace blesses us with a controversial drama in a riveting production at North Light Theater, smoothly directed by Dexter Bullard, is surely the most controversial and talked about show of the year. As a matter of fact, in the lobby after the opening night performance, I have not witnessed as many people talking, debating, even some arguing about the meaning of the play and what went on. Generally, critics never talk about the play they just saw because they don't want anyone to know what they think about it. But we were all asking each other what it meant and debating certain points of the play. Murder, suicide, betrayal, blind faith, and the search for meaning in one's life are the explosive ingredients in this gripping drama. Grace, written by Craig Wright, known for the wacky HBO series 6 Feet Under, in this play attacks and questions religious fanaticism, blind faith, and the zealots' attempt to convert everyone in their path to their religion. This dramatic piece examines the nature of faith, the belief in God, and how extreme beliefs can color our perception of reality. The arrogance and self-righteousness of the right wing is deftly depicted here. And I believe that's what Craig Wright was really trying to do. He was trying to attack and warn us about how fanatics can color our lives. Wright sure takes a poke at the evangelical Christians, as he has Steve, played by Steve Kay, the Bible-toting real estate developer, speaking in preachy tones and gesturing like a TV preacher. This was a marvelous performance by Steve Kay. If someone had put an 800 number underneath him, a lot of people would have called in with a pledge. With his wife Sarah, played by Cheyenne Cross, they move from Minnesota to South Florida, where Steve preaches the word as he blindly trusts that a Swiss banker will wire him the funds needed to purchase the hotels for his renovation business. Wright was trying to show that if you have blind faith in religion, you might also have blind faith in business dealings, making you naive and susceptible to delusion. Jack McGaw, once more as set designer, has a revolving set that depicts two apartments as one, where we see the Christian couple and their neighbor, Sam, played by the scary Michael Shannon, both occupying the same set. Sam is a non-believer computer programmer who is embittered after becoming scarred by an auto accident that killed his fiance and left him with a belief that he is now unlovable and worthless. add the bug exterminator, Carl, the German World War II veteran whose experiences left him devoid of belief in God, and we have the ingredients for high drama. Carl was played magnificently by the veteran actor Mike Nesbaum. The play opens with a man murdering a woman, and then another man, then himself. It flashes back to reveal how and why this occurred. This edgy show features Steve Kay as the manic religious fanatic Steve, who goes from blind believer in love with his wife and optimistic about his real estate business to despondent soul whose faith is shattered, leading him to murder and suicide. Grace unfolds with biting humor, exaggerated pokes at the religious zealots, with seamless plotting that builds up the non-believers to wonder if there is indeed something out there, while the believers question their faith as their world crashes. Wright presents a dark riddle where the characters become enmeshed in a life-death struggle that challenges the nature of real faith. While Grace is a warning about fanaticism and blind faith, it shakes up audiences to ponder the effects of religious belief on human behavior. Does one's hope depend on one's faith? And if we lose our faith, do we lose our desire to live? Grace will offend many, please some, and surely get all of us talking. This high drama reeks with controversy and stimulating thoughts. Grace demonstrates once more the power of the live stage. Grace at Northlight Theater is a highly recommended show that will certainly get you debating and arguing with your friends all the way home. Grace at Northlight Theater plays Tuesdays at 7:30, Wednesdays at 1 and 7:30, Thursdays at 7:30, Fridays at 8, Saturdays at 3 and 8, Sundays at 2:30 and 7. The running time is 90 minutes with no intermission. For more information, call Northlight Theater at 847-673-6300. That's 847-673-6300. Don't miss this show. It will get you guys thinking. Hi, this is Tom Williams, and here is my review of The Seahorse by Edward J. Moore at a Red Orchid Theater in Chicago. Theater finds quirky, obscure plays that necessitate strong actors and deft direction. Their latest gem, The Seahorse, is a broady, battling, intoxicating two-hander. With a realistic set designed by Grant Sabin, The Seahorse depicts a raunchy seaman's bar in Southern California. The Seahorse is where hard-drinking, hard-fighting merchant sailors come to quench their thirst. The only thing lacking with this terrific set is the smell of stale beer. I'm sure that after a few more performances and all of the fighting that goes on, I'm sure that the set will have a smell of stale beer. Harry Bales, played by Guy Van Swearingen, returns from 2 months aboard ship to the Seahorse. He lives with the tough, large-sized proprietor, Gertrude Blum, played by Kristen Fitzgerald, with whom he loves and fears at the same time. From the opening scene when Harry pounds on the door at 2:30 a.m. in a rainstorm and Gertrude ignores him as she's cleaning up the bar, we know that this isn't a gentle romantic play. Eventually, Gertrude opens the door, letting a soaked Harry enter, and the verbal duet begins. These two wounded, emotionally scarred characters have a love-hate relationship filled with passion and sexually charged moments. The guarded Gertrude loves the good guy Harry as the sexual and life-fulfilling friend only, but not as a lifetime lover. She listens to Harry's latest scheme, offering advice and caution. Harry has a special present for Gertrude, a wedding dress. This sends Gertrude into an emotionally bitter frenzy. She belittles and threatens Harry often, resulting in physical combat that has the two punching, wrestling, rolling on the ground, hitting each other with the baseball bat. Many of these fights end up with hugs and kisses. These two crude blue-collar types, sex, booze, and physicality are a way of life. Fighting is just another form of communication and foreplay. Kristen Fitzgerald is terrific as she goes from stern, gentle, motherly type to mean, tough barmaid to tortured soul, terrified of love, yet still vulnerable to it. Fitzgerald is one of those confident actors willing to reach whatever level is needed to accurately portray her character. Guy Van Swearingen, another gutsy actor, specializes in playing flawed, weird characters. He plays Harry with a combination of raw, salty, hard-drinking macho, and as a simple guy lost in his present dream for a better life and hopelessly determined to win Gertrude's love. Harry has an epiphany that sees him buying a boat and taking Gertrude away from the hard life running the seedy tavern. His marriage proposal garners laughter from Gertrude, and sparks start to fly. Gertrude's abusive marriage left her untrusting of men. These two are so emotionally scarred and jaded that intimacy filled with optimism is foreign and uncomfortable to them. They use humor, anger, and physicality together with alcohol to cope with their trepidations. Kudos to fight director David Woolley for the scary fight scenes that make Gertrude a fearsome figure. Fitzgerald and Van Swearingen are so powerful and accurate in conveying their pathos, desires, and their lust that the show unfolds as a very strong character study. The Seahorse contains raw humor, violence, and sexuality in a sordid look at how two damaged people struggle in an attempt to have love overcome their fears. Seahorse is a tour de force for Christian Fitzgerald and Guy Van Swearingen. You'll be hard-pressed to witness finer theatrical craftsmanship than these two display here. You'll also not find two actors who are willing to lay it all out on the line. They end up bruised and physically beaten by the end of the play. This is a marvelous piece of theater, so I recommend it. The Seahorse is playing, and the show times are Thursday through Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 7, running time 100 minutes with intermission. The phone number for more information is 312-943-8722. That's 312-943-8722. This is a recommended show that I think you'll enjoy. This is Tom Williams, thanking you for listening to my reviews on Talk Theater in Chicago. And remember, go see a play this week.
Hello, and welcome to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast, brought to you by TalkTheaterInChicago.com. The following interview is with Tom Williams and Dorothy Milne, the artistic director of Lifeline Theater.
Hello, and this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago. This is the initial podcast, and we are going to honor one of the finest non-equity theater companies in Chicago, Lifeline Theater, and we have its artistic director, Dorothy Milne. Hello, Dorothy.
Hello, Tom. I'm delighted to be on the initial podcast. Lifeline Theater is located in the far north side Chicago neighborhood of Rogers Park. We'll soon be entering our 24th season. We specialize in literary adaptations and original work. All the work is original, whether adapted or original from the ground up. We do work for adults and for children. And we are located at 6912 North Glenwood Avenue, Chicago, Illinois, steps from the Red Line, the Morse Avenue stop.
Wow. And what's the phone number for tickets? We want to get this part in.
Oh, that's important.
Oh, yes,
773-761-4477.
Great. And your shows run year-round.
We pretty much run year-round. Yeah. We keep talking about building in a summer break, but we haven't succeeded in doing it yet. You know, if the tickets are selling, you get all starry-eyed with the dollar signs in your eyes, and you just keep extending. So we pretty much run year-round with six or seven shows per year.
Wow, that's terrific. All right, let's talk a little about you. We'll get more into Lifeline, but tell us about yourself and how long you've been with the group.
Well, I'm thinking I've been working with Lifeline as an occasional artist and then an ensemble member for the past 13 years, I'm thinking. And then when one of the founding members moved on to Los Angeles, Merrill Friedman, I took over as artistic director, and that would be almost 7 years ago.
Wow. And you also direct some of the shows.
I do.
Right. What are some of the past shows you've directed?
Most recently, this past fall, I directed The Talisman Ring, which was all about swords, fights, and secret panels and romance.
Oh, it was tremendous. I didn't see the original version of it, but Wow, it was terrific.
It's a fun show. We brought it back 10 years after the first time we did it because we just couldn't resist it. Before then, I've done Around the World in 80 Days and Jane Eyre and Trust Me on This and Far from the Madding Crowd and all of the Lord Peter Wimsey mysteries, Whose Body, Strong Poison, and coming up soon, Gaudy Night.
You know, I love those mysteries. And you find a way of making them mysteries and making them funny, too.
Well, you know, life is funny. I always figured that there should be no drama that doesn't have laughs in it. Because everything is a mixture of, pleasure and pain. And, comedies should have their painful parts that play through. The drama always has to have laughs in it because real people are just funny.
Well, what I've always been impressed about with the shows is that your ensemble are so
very
versatile.
Strong.
I mean, you do a lot of English plays, whether they be mysteries or comedies of manners, and they have all the different accents, from the High English to the Cockney to Irish to all kinds of different American accents, and your ensemble is terrific, Adam.
Well, we have certainly a lot of regulars that we use that are very skilled, but, about 60% of the actors we use every year are new to us.
Is that right?
Yeah, because,
oh.
I mean, you see a lot of the same faces every
right.
time, but there are so darn many people usually our grown-up shows have 9 people in them, and the kids' shows have 4 or 5, and we're doing 6 or 7 shows a year. So we have a lot of new people coming through, too, and we just have some really, really wonderful dialect coaches that work with us, too, aside from the fact that, people are trained, they come in prepared, but we have some good coaches.
Well, you can't tell any difference between the work that you guys do and any of the equity companies in town. I mean, the acting talent is there.
It's very strong. We're very proud of our...
Name a few of your people who are on your ensemble who do some of the roles, and what roles they were in, if you could.
Actors in the ensemble, Peter Greenberg has played Lord Peter Wimsey.
Yes, he's true.
Yeah, he's always wonderful. He was in Talisman Ring and is, often in our shows. Patrick Blashill was in Talisman Ring as the sort of drunken judge that's staying at the inn, and he was also one of the smugglers. And he was Frodo in the Lord of the Rings things we've done. Jennifer Tyler is Harriet Vane in the Peter Wimsey mysteries. She was Jane Eyre, and she's been in several things.
She's your main leading lady, wouldn't she say?
Yeah, she's very strong. And we have 2 new ensemble members, Robert and Elise Kozlarik, who've been working with us as actors for years, and are both really wonderful. Elise and Rob were both in Strong Poison.
Strong Poison was very good.
And then one of our founding members that's still active is Sandy Snyder, who was nominated for a Jeff for her performance in Strong Poison as Miss Clemson, the lady who was part of the crime-solving unit.
And what's your current show that you have just going to open in the next few days?
Johnny Tremaine is going to open on February 13th.
Okay, tell us about that.
Well, we're very excited about it. It's an American Revolutionary War story. It's based on a Newbery Award-winning book by Esther Forbes. And it's sort of a coming-of-age story of a young man who plans to become a silversmith. And due to an accident, his entire life is changed. And that is merged with him becoming aware of the stirrings that become the American Revolution and becoming swept up into that action.
You know, there's not enough done about the American Revolution.
Well, I find it in a perfectly palatable way. I find this play really educational in a really fun way. You get to meet these people that you've only heard about in history, and Paul Revere and Sam Adams, and they are
the Sons of Liberty.
The Sons of Liberty.
Okay.
They are part of this story, and the people that Johnny Tremaine becomes
involved with.
And who
adapted the show for you?
John Hildreth.
Is he one of your?
He is one of our ensemble members. He has adapted both of the Kurt Vonnegut pieces we've done, and he adapted Around the World in 80 Days. He directed The Shadow, and
The Shadow was dynamite.
I know. Yeah, he and that was, of course, him he created, with his ensemble of actors, he created the story of that around the Shadow episodes.
So Lifeline not only has an in-house group of actors that you use, you also do your own adaptations.
Yes, everything we do is adapted or written new here, and most of it is written by ensemble members or Chicago artists that we are working with. We are working with exclusively Chicago artists at this time, and so some of the adaptations have been done by folks outside the ensemble, but they're all local.
Okay, Johnny Tremaine was directed by?
Katie McLean, who works with us very regularly as an actress, and directed Cricket in Times Square for us a season or two ago, and we're really thrilled to have her. She has been in numerous Lifeline shows as an actor. She was the lead in Trust Me on This.
Okay, and, yes, I remember now. Who
she was in Far From the Madding Crowd and several other shows.
So you guys have carved quite a unique niche.
Well, we really encourage our artists, as you can probably tell, to wear different hats. You know, Katie has always been an actor, and we kind of thought she'd make a good director, so she jumped in on Cricket in Times Square, and she did a bang-up job, so she's got this Mongo Mainstage show going on now, and she's just really done marvelous work with it. I'm really thrilled with the show.
All right. Carry us through, like Johnny Tremaine. All right, it's going to open on the 13th of February, and it runs till?
April 9th-ish.
Okay, around April 9th.
Yeah.
And the performances are, give us an idea now.
They are Fridays at 7:30, okay. Saturdays at 4 p.m. and 8 p.m., and Sundays at 5:30 p.m.
Those are good times.
Yeah. So okay. In previews, we have no Saturday matinees, but once the show gets open after the 13th, we had the 4 o'clock Saturdays.
And you are located, give us the location
again. We are at
again.
6912 North Glenwood Avenue. We are a few steps from the Red Line, the Morse Avenue stop, and we also have access to a parking lot near the theater and then a little shuttle, free shuttle, free parking, and then free shuttle to loop you back and forth to the lot.
You know, many people have told me that shuttle really makes a difference, so they're not, this is a tough area, like a lot
of
parts of the city.
Yeah, it's hard to find street parking, especially if you're getting close to performance time. And so this allows us to get everybody in a timely way.
So what do? They can either pull up by the theater and then they get directed to where it's at?
Right. We have somebody standing out in front of the theater with a little map. So if you didn't quite understand the directions when you reserved your tickets, you can just pull up to the theater
and
be
talked
through it.
And then you have the van drives into the
theater. The van does loops.
That's a great idea.
It's really been a lifesaver for us because it makes it easy for people who, you know, sometimes the weather isn't feeling nice enough to walk the two or three blocks to the lot. So it's a nice thing.
Okay, a little bit more about yourself. What plays have you been in, or are you strictly the artistic director now?
You know, the last thing I acted in, I think, was Cooking with Lard, which was in 2001. And, I think that was the last thing I was in. Although I have appeared as, you know, a dancing, singing chicken in Click, Clack, Moo, and also a cow. I appear in things occasionally on a one-time-only basis when somebody's sick and we can't find the understudy.
Oh, I see. So you're a supernumerary also. Oh, okay.
But most of the time I just direct.
It's Chicago theater. You do what it works, right?
Yes.
It works. Take tickets, right? Mop the floor if it has to be done.
Right.
That's one of the great things about Chicago theater is for an inexpensive ticket. And what are your ticket prices?
Our ticket, well, the kids' series tickets, the top price is $9.
Tell us now about that. Since you brought that up, I want to make sure we get that. Tell us about the children's.
Well, the kids' series, we do three or sometimes four of those a year. Okay. They're aimed at ages six and up usually. And they too are usually based on books, and sometimes they're musicals, sometimes they're interactive. There's kind of a broad range of ways we approach those. The current one, Ricky Ticky Tavi, is extremely interactive.
Say that again.
Ricky Ticky Tavi, another Just So Stories. All the tales by Rudyard Kipling. There's three stories. The audience gets to be involved and We have, there's Bollywood dancing in between the stories. It's really a fun time and a different show for us.
Here's what I hear, and this is, you'll love to hear this. People who are very sophisticated theater people that I take to, like, mm-hmm. shows like yours that love to come with critics, you know, on opening nights, they all tell me, oh, this is the place I brought my niece, my nephew, my daughters, and they do such marvelous work. You guys are very well known for doing the top children's shows.
We're so proud of our kids' shows, and we give them the same attention that we give to the adult series. In fact, it's all the same artists that are working on both. We have a core ensemble of about 12 or 14 of us, and that are sort of responsible for leading the creation of what we do. And then we hire about 150 artists a year, but there's about a dozen of us that are determining the programming and leading it. And the kids' programming is very important to us.
Well, the kids are a tough audience, aren't they? Because they're very honest, right?
They are. And they demand that there be a certain level of action and motion. And you know, really, I think that, you know, I get you know, there's sometimes confusion for our theater because people bring kids to the adult series because they go, oh, we're a kids' theater. And then sometimes it's too scary, or sometimes, you know, it's not suitable for whatever reason. But I've always often been really surprised at how well sometimes the kids do at the adult series shows. Because I'm like, well, you know, if it's too talky, kids are bored. And I think if it's too talky, we're all bored. The adults just try not to show it.
Kids aren't. Mark Robin once told me, you know, he does all those Marriott shows, the kids' shows. He told me, he says, they're so honest. He says, if they don't like it, they'll shout out, Mommy, I don't like this. Can we go home?
Yeah, take me home.
They're nothing polite, which is cool.
Which is great.
But he says, once you interact with them and you see it's the magic of it, mm-hmm. it working, that they also give you that.
Yeah, when it's working, there's nothing like it.
Well, give us an idea how many children's shows you do. Two or three or four a year?
We do. We have generally done three a year. The last couple years we've done four a year because we've sort of wedged in a show over in the December-January period, Snowflake Tim's Big Holiday Adventure, which was very interactive and really fun. But I think we're going to rest Snowflake Tim for a couple years now, and we may go back to the three-show model for the next couple years.
And do you keep adding new shows, or do you... since, you know, obviously another group of children every so many years, do you, like, keep recycling them? Or?
Well, we bring back a show, you know, when something's been a big hit, then 6 or 7 years later we'll bring it back because, like you say, it's a whole new audience. But there's a lot of good books out there, and so we keep finding new things we want to do.
That is outstanding. The next one I want to talk about is one that I thought was... broke new ground for you guys, Queen Lucia.
It did.
Tell us about that. First, let me make a comment. I thought it was one of the best things you guys have ever done because it had everything in your normal shows, the great accents, the humor, the big ensemble pieces, a great show. And then, from what I understand, you brought your children's people who only wrote music and lyrics for the children's shows and had him do an adult show.
Yeah, George Howe, who was the composer-lyricist for that show, has done numerous kids' shows for us, and they've all just been wonderful. And he and the director, Francis Limoncelli, have worked together many times here and away from here and before here when they were both living in other cities, other states.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
They have collaborated on things in the past. And so we had been... eager to give George a platform for his music that is seen by more than just our kids series. And so when Christina Calvet, who has adapted many of our shows, said she wanted to do Queen Lucia, it seemed like the perfect fit. And, you know, I know nothing about producing musicals. Thankfully, you know, George and Francis are old pros.
Oh, that's amazing.
Because the rest of us were just... You know, it's a whole different animal. And the fact that we put this up within a year, I think when I read about how musicals are developed, I go, they usually take more time than that.
Several years, and then there's usually 50 songs and 20 rewrites and two or three directors. And a lot of them show it even at the final product. Well, Jamie Axtell helped quite a bit.
Well, he was wonderful.
I've interviewed Jamie. He's quite a character.
Yeah, yeah.
Great guy and a tremendous talent.
Yeah.
I thought he helped anchor that.
Yeah, he was wonderful. Well, I think Georgie, his character, is the heart of the piece and the one we have to follow. So it's called Queen Lucia, but Georgie's the one that we're...
Yes, he's really the star.
...really emotionally attached to.
But the songs were smart and sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I understand you guys made a soundtrack.
We did.
A DVD.
We did.
A CD of it, right?
Yeah, and George and Christina are getting inquiries about it from around the country. And and George has made a CD that is really stunning. I think if you go to our website, you can link to how to do that.
You know,
and you can also buy it in our lobby.
Yeah, but you know, this is a. I don't think I saw it on your website.
Well, it's planning to be linked to the website.
Well,
that's why I hesitated.
And
I will
I will throw this out here, and we'll be on this and make sure that we don't, you know, that if you put a link on it, I'll put a little piece on to help you guys out. Because it is a terrific, it sings so well.
Yeah, we're so proud of it. And we feel lucky because it was, you know, it's a big ordeal of a process, a musical. And it was a very strange animal to us, and we're so glad it worked out well.
When I came to see the show, I brought a lady, Marilyn Eisenberg, who's a good friend, who's seen she's real into Broadway musicals,
mm-hmm.
including, first it was only New York. Well, I've taken her around Chicago. She's now a big fan. When I invited her to come on your opening night for that, she goes, what about Lifeline? She goes, they do kids shows. And I go, they do tremendous adult shows also. Based on her taking her grandchildren to your children's mm-hmm. show, she said, well, I'll come with you. She says, I know they do good words. She says, that's a nice theater. She was blown away by it as a music. She's called it one of the cutest chamber musicals she's ever seen.
Oh,
so that's always
very
good.
Nice.
And I like to hear that feedback because I just loved it. But it's always good to see someone who's a little bit of on the snobbish side, and that's cool. And how did that show do for you guys?
You know, it's a much more expensive show to do than much of ours. But I think it did pretty well. Because it was expensive, it wasn't a big moneymaker, but we did fine.
Well, I hope that you've broken new ground, and I hope you're going to do a few more.
Yes, I hope we do, too.
Because the creativity is there. And as we need new material, new adaptations, because, you know, people keep recycling the same 100 plays, we need more of that. And musicals, we certainly need more.
Excellent.
So are you planning on doing any more?
Well, not this, not yet, but in the distant works, yes.
Good.
You know, we will certainly do another one again.
Good. So you had enough of the positive feedback.
Oh, yeah. We were really thrilled with it. We had only positive feedback, really.
I loved it. I really did.
We had a wonderful time, and I are very proud of it. So we'll certainly do it again.
All right, let me ask you, let's talk about you. And your new show is opening February 13th. It's Johnny Tremaine. That is a Civil War, American Revolution story.
Right.
And it's a coming of age, right?
Yes.
Another big ensemble piece?
There are 9 of them.
Wow.
And they play a bunch of people.
Okay.
And so they're very busy. And we have a Boston Tea Party, and we have... various locations and the usual traveling around a bunch of places on our little stage.
Well, if it's anything as ambitious as your Civil War show, tell us about that.
The Killer Angels?
Killer Angels was amazing. Let me just throw a little aside. I was sitting, Chris Jones from the Tribune was sitting to the left of me and Hedy Weiss from the Sun-Times to the right of me. We were all on the edge of our seats for the entire show.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Yeah, it was.
I knew what they
were going to write before that.
Well, it's funny. There's different challenges with this show because with Killer Angels, you know, there's a whole bunch of battles to deal with.
Yeah, and you had to give the strategy and all from both sides.
Yeah. And, yeah, you had to – there was a lot to explain.
Yeah.
And then you actually had to have battles. Whereas with this play, you know, the battles are all coming up. This is the very beginning, you know. Mm-hmm. We're not really at war yet. This is what starts the war, you know. So so we have less battles to deal with.
But you have all these, I mean, somebody's playing John Hancock, Samuel Adams.
Oh, yeah, we have all these
Paul Revere, I would think.
Right? Yeah, we got a Paul Revere.
Okay. How about is George Washington in this?
No,
okay.
No.
All right.
But actually,
he wouldn't be because he's from Virginia, right? This is set in Boston, right?
Right, right.
Okay.
So John Hancock is in it. I think we've mentioned the others, Sam Adams, Paul Revere, yeah.
Now, what type of show? Is this a comedy? Is this a drama? Because you said you always have some laughs in it, right?
Well, it's both.
Okay. Right,
I mean, certainly, you know, when I hadn't read this book as a younger person. And
I've
so
never
when,
heard of it. Then.
When it was proposed, I was like, oh, yeah, that's a young adult book, isn't it? And I was like, well, all right, John wants to do it. And so I'm reading it. And it's a really much more complex story than I expected. And the hero is a very flawed young man who has a huge journey through the course of the play. And it's just a really great story. And it is has some very, very painful episodes. And at the same time, there's a lot of humor in it, too.
Okay.
So it's the usual mix.
Yeah. Well, you guys, I don't know of anyone that can take these period pieces and do them as well as your ensemble does.
Oh, thank you.
So tell us now what the future is going to be for Lifeline. What do we have coming up for the rest of the year?
Well, next in our kids series after Ricky Ticky Tavi will be Brave Potatoes, which is about a bunch of courageous spuds who lead a vegetable revolt against Chef Hack'em-Up. That's a musical that is by George Howe musical,
okay.
As a matter of fact. And Jim Grote did the adaptation, who has partnered with George on Click Clack Moo and Giggle Giggle Quack. And Shoal Milos is directing, and he directed those others as well. So he's a director, choreographer, so that
and
ought to
the
be
The children's
fun.
Shows, when do they run?
Those run on Saturdays at 11 a.m. and 1 p.m., and Sundays at 1 p.m. And then if you know a school group who wants to come, we bring in busloads of school kids on weekday mornings.
Well, you were able to get your actors there on weekday mornings.
Yeah, I know.
That's terrific.
We all went into theater because we were night people. But sometimes you got to do morning matinees.
Yeah. Well, that's that keeps them honest. Keeps
yeah.
them get to bed the night
it's,
before.
It's great to do a show for all kids, though, because, you know, you have just a more visceral response than when it's a group of kids and adults,
mm-hmm.
because there's sort of a more of a monitored response then, and when it's just, it's like they all respond as one when it's a big student group, and that's really exciting.
And there's the schools, these are like the public schools or what?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, some of the Chicago public schools, okay. people also bring kids in by bus from suburbs. And
do you actively market to the schools? These
yeah,
schools?
We have a list of people who have come here before that we always send out faxes about what's coming up and whatnot. But if you want to be on our list, let us know because,
who
you know,
would they contact?
They would contact operations manager, Erica Foster, at 773-262-0633.
Okay, that's good because I'm for anything that brings children in the theater because I got my start that way in terms
mm-hmm.
of loving theater. And if they start seeing it young and then after seeing your type of children's shows, they'll come to some of the adult shows. And there's others that do like Shakespeare does the short Shakespeare's and
mm-hmm.
so forth. Once we get these kids in and they realize the power and how great theater is, you usually have them for life.
Yeah, I think we're in a unusual position here at Lifeline since we do an equal amount of kids programming and grown-up programming that we see people transition from one to the other, and that's exciting to us.
Oh, wow, yeah.
You know, we've been here, you know, almost 24 years, so... So
right,
a couple generations have gone by.
How many Jeffs citations have you received? I almost said one, but it's received.
Tom, this is what we'd all like to know. We were trying to figure it out the other day, and I'm not sure we know. I know.
That says a lot about it says a lot about that you guys are so into your work. I mean, a lot of groups, they could tell you they won, you know, 12 of them, and they could tell you the colors and who was in each one.
Yeah.
You guys are so into just doing the work. That's great.
Well, thank you. I feel like we're just bad record keepers. But we were just trying to figure that out the other day, so I don't have an answer for you. Somewhere in our literature it says over 60 awards and nominations, but I don't know. I don't know. I find out the number, I'll get back to you.
On my website, Lifeline is number 2 or in the top 5 non-equity theaters in Chicago.
Oh, well, that's very flattering.
And it's not fair, but if I were to push them together with the big budget equity theaters, I told a lot of people, I said, you know, you can spend $50, $60, $80, $90, $100 seeing some of the top shows, and sometimes the smaller theaters for the much less ticket price are better theater, and you guys qualify.
Why, thank you.
You are one of the groups of the 15 that I have on my website that I tell people, just go there. You don't even have to know the name of the show. You will see a top-notch show.
Oh.
And there's only a few. There's 15, and I don't know if I would say all the 15. I would say the first 8 or 10, at least, on my list, you can just blindly just go. As critics, we do that.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing a show, we must go.
Right.
And then we look in the press release you guys sent us what it's
about.
What am I
seeing exactly?
Yeah. And that says a lot.
Yeah.
So you got to be proud of that.
Well, I am very proud of this theater. I think we have a really strong
company. All right. What's your major achievement that you're the proudest of?
Well, I really like being in a position to create an atmosphere of safety and support where artists can take risks. And I feel like people get to take chances here, and we're as an ensemble, we all come to various rehearsals and give feedback, and I feel like we can really support a new project to a shiny finish because we have such a strong support system. We also encourage artists to get to wear different hats and be different parts of the creative team than they're used to being, and that's fun too. And we're very, very involved with our neighborhood. We've had Kid Fest. We've sponsored Kid Fest for the last 7 or 8 years.
What is Kid Fest?
Kid Fest started as a block party back in 1999, and we would close off part of the street, and we'd put up a stage and have music and storytellers and juggling and fire throwers. And
sounds like fun.
And yeah, and some hands-on arts and crafts and stuff. And so we did that for a few years, and then our neighbors, other artists in the neighborhood and businesses down the street were like, we should make this a whole art fest. So a few years after that, it expanded into Glenwood Avenue Arts Fest, which Kid Fest is one end, and then the rest of the fest is the rest of the two blocks. And we have a couple stages, and we have food and beer vendors now. the Morseland restaurant, our neighbors around the corner, they have a food booth and a beer booth. And
when Heartland, do you have this?
Heartland Cafe. It's coming up August 26th and 27th.
Oh, it's a summer thing. That's
great. Yeah, it's been in the fall the last few years, but we're moving to summer because various boring schedule reasons. But I think it's a really unique festival, and really shows off Rogers Park uniqueness and our area as an arts corridor.
Yes, it is getting.
Yeah.
You got No Exit Cafe down the street.
No Exit Cafe, yeah. And
Heartland
Cafe, who's coming up on their 30th anniversary pretty soon, I think, and they're very involved as well, and always have.
So it's a kind of area that. You can get off the Morris L,
mm-hmm.
and you can grab something to eat either before or after the show, and see a terrific show and park once.
Exactly.
That's not bad.
That's pretty good.
And I can tell you that the shows are very, very good. Okay, Dorothy Mill, tell me what gets you up in the morning. What excites you? And what are your goals?
You know, I feel very lucky because I feel like I'm making my little living now doing something that I would do for free. You know,
it's always fun, isn't it?
You know, that it is exactly what I want to be doing. So it's a joy to get up in the morning.
That's great. And you know, one of the things that I heard you say earlier is you allow your artist to take risks. Because that's what theater is really all about. It's the stretching of the art form.
Mm-hmm.
And like when you said John, what's his last name?
John Hildreth, our adapter.
I wanted to make sure.
He's a director and a...
But you know, you said something earlier about him. You said you didn't know on Johnny Tremaine. You didn't know the work. But he wanted to do it. So you backed him. And then you read it.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, that's trust. It shows leadership. And it shows that you will allow your people to make mistakes. As far as your ensemble goes, how do you get them to work so hard to play 5 and 6 roles, 2 and 3 different accents, which many of them do? I mean,
well, you know, most actors would rather be frantically busy than sitting backstage playing cards.
Yes, I agree.
You know, so, you know, I think they kind of, there's always that time during tech rehearsal where we're all like, why are we in this business? Whose idea was this anyway? When it just doesn't seem like it's ever going to work. But there is a real thrill to working through those challenges and coming out the other side of that. And I really think that that having the audience gasp when there's only 8 people in the curtain call and you had a cast of 40, you know, is
incredible.
Now, is something they're proud of.
I mean, I see, last year I reviewed 310 plays, so I see a lot of theater. And if I don't have your notes and the program and start, there's many shows I thought you had 25 people in it.
Sometimes people aren't aware
really
of who's
yeah.
playing all the same
yeah.
parts, yeah, until after the show.
But it's a testimony to the director, to the stage manager, to the whole creative process of people working together. Because there's no way you can make some of those like mysteries work or mm-hmm. any of the Queen Lucia, any of the shows I've seen where. So much is going on, and then, boom, you have a blackout, wham, bam, boom, and they're all different. It's incredible. And the stories just move along.
Yeah.
You know, the pacing I've always liked on your shows. Even a few of them that some people get hung up on when they look at the time. I've seen a couple of longer shows at your place
mm-hmm.
that I could have gone another hour.
Well, they're big, fat books, some
yeah.
of them, so...
And it's a challenge.
You can
do.
Only squeeze them down to a couple hours and sometimes a couple hours and 15, 20 minutes sometimes.
But,
so.
But like the Vonnegut piece, it was a complicated story.
Very complicated story.
And yeah, some people said, well, maybe you could have cut a couple of parts of it. But what I like that you guys do in your adaptations is you don't ruin the shows by just stripping them down and you know, and giving them a different meaning. And once you set up these little side characters or these little parts, you resolved them.
Mm-hmm.
You just didn't leave us hanging,
right?
Which I've seen in adaptations.
Yeah,
and that's really a testimony to you know to the writing and to the production value.
We've got we have in our artistic ensemble. It's not just actors. There's a handful of actors, but then we have designers in our artistic ensemble, and you know, of course, writers and directors. But and I think that's why. We can give such good support to a new project is because not only the designers and directors and writers that are on the team, the creative team, but the rest of us that are emotionally invested in its success in the ensemble that are also writers and directors and designers can come and when I'm directing a show and I'm like, I'm at my wit's end, I've got problems I don't know how to solve. Come on, you guys, come to rehearsal and tell me what to do.
So
and I get these fresh eyes who can help
ensemble.
Me.
Yeah.
It truly is ensemble.
Yeah. And, a lot of people don't understand that's what really makes the creative process work. I know when I go to small theater groups and I see one name wrote it, one name directed, the same guy wrote, direct, starred in it and all that. Boy, that gives the warning lights, and generally there's problems with it.
Well, yeah, we certainly don't work that way because I think the thrill of collaboration is part of the high for us, and I think it's part of the rush for designers that come in to work with us too, is that especially since we're building something from scratch or you know virtual scratch. We have the designers have a lot of input on the script development and stuff, too, because they can sit there and say, you can cut that whole page because I can solve it with blah, 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 you know.
And what you do, you have a relatively small stage,
uh-huh.
but it's high enough where it's usually several levels or several, like, ground floor, then I don't know what you call it, two or three levels.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always loved the creativity of what you guys do with it. And we all say that when we walk in, well, what's it going to look like this time? And how do you do, you know, the Battle of Gettysburg on a fairly small stage, or all of them, the several levels, which is not only set design, but you've got terrific lighting design, mm-hmm. people and sound design. The shadow was a
great team show too.
Are you going to do any more of those with those radio type things?
You know, I don't know. That's John Hildreth again,
Hildreth, that's right.
I don't know. I don't know whether he'll go back to that or not. That's his baby. But
well, there's only a few people that even attempt it, and you guys. I just thought it was terrific.
Yeah.
And I was noticing the reaction of the teens or 20-somethings that were in the audience because they've never seen that.
Right.
You know, and they don't go back. I'm just old enough where a little bit of that old-time radio was live.
Uh-huh.
So I did hear the shadow
a
few times when I was real young. And so, but to these kids have never heard it. Like you mentioned, a Foley artist or how they're doing it. When they come and see that, it just blows them away.
Oh, it's fun to watch the live sound being made.
And it's quite creative. How do you guys do that? Do you just figure out what works, or is that a
that was decisions between John Hildreth, the adapter, adapter and director on that one, sort of. And Toy DiOrio is an ensemble member of ours, and she was the sound designer. Actually, I think she got a Jeff for that.
Great. Because certainly, if that isn't award-winning.
It was really, and the props designer was very involved, too. They all three, problem solved together. And
all right. Now, tell us again, let's go, your new show. This is Lifeline Theater. I'm giving you a chance to do
Johnny
a
Tremaine will be opening February 13th and running through early April. And we are a Lifeline Theater. We're on the far north side of Chicago in the neighborhood of Rogers Park at 6912 North Glenwood Avenue. We are a few steps from the Morse stop on the Red Line, and we're also just a straight shot up Lakeshore Drive and just a little couple blocks west, and we have free parking on a shuttle that loops you back to the theater.
Okay, and your shows are run Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Give us the times.
Fridays at 7:30, Saturdays at 4 p.m. and 8 p.m., and Sundays at 5:30 for Johnny Tremaine. And Ricky Ticky Tavi and other Kipling stories run through March 26th, and that's Saturdays at 11 a.m. and 1 p.m., Sundays at 1 p.m., and weekday student matinees are available. Our box office number, you can talk about any of these things, is 773-761-4477.
And give us your website, too.
www.lifelinetheater.com. So it's a .com, even though we're an org, and Lifeline Theater is spelled with an R-E at the end of it, rather than, I think, the more usual E-R.
Very good. that's very complete. And I'll add to that that they are one of the top five non-equity theater companies in Chicago. And I've seen probably 20 shows you've done. I have not seen a bad show. And I think my reviews reflect it, but that's incredible because everybody's, entitled to a show that is
everybody has a swing and a miss sometimes.
That's right.
Yeah.
But it's amazing the quality control, particularly when you guys are doing it from scratch. It starts out a novel, right, or a book,
mm-hmm.
and ends up live on stage.
Yeah.
Thank you so much
for the
interview. We have been speaking with Dorothy Milne from Lifeline. You are the artistic director, and I look forward to the show. I'm going to see it on the 12th, and I'll have a review of it by probably about noon on the 13th. And I know it will be a good show because you guys aren't capable of doing anything but great work.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I'm Tom Williams from Talk Theater in Chicago. We will see you on the next podcast.
Thank you very much for joining us here on this episode of Talk Theater in Chicago, the podcast. Don't forget, you can find out more about any reviews that you have heard all at talktheaterinchicago.com. Again, that's talktheaterinchicago.com. Thanks again for listening. And remember, go see a play this week.